sex is an important trait in hemp because we use the female plant specifically for the production of CBD and THC.
Uh-oh, we're talking about sex today on the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. My name is Eric Herlock, and at the top of the show, you heard Larry Smart from Cornell University. He's a plant geneticist, a professor of horticulture, and he's one of the leaders of the Cornell Hemp Research Team. We'll hear about the role that sex plays in hemp production. We'll get a good look at the research that they're doing up there at Cornell. And we'll also talk about the challenges facing industrial hemp, as well as some of its promises. And of course, we'll get into what farmers can be doing now to get ready for this crop. But first, we have some news from here in Pennsylvania. So, Pennsylvania State Senator Judy Schwenk, a Democrat from Berks County, introduced Senate Bill 335, the Industrial Hemp Act, which, and I'm quoting here a press release from the senator's office, this bill recognizes hemp as an allowable cosmetic ingredient, food additive, or herb to be regulated as any other food ingredient or food commodity. The senator says, this legislation will allow farmers continued access to a new market and put them on the same playing field as other states like Colorado that have passed hemp legislation. I contacted the senator's office this morning to see if she could comment for today's show about the new legislation, but she's busy with budget hearings and some events in her district. Shout out to District 11, yo, Berks County. Anyway, I hope to talk to her sometime before next week's show, so stay tuned for that. And we'll take a quick break, and then we'll hear our conversation with Cornell professor Larry Smart. Hey, listeners. If you're not a current subscriber to Lancaster Farming Newspaper, now's your chance. We have a special deal for you. Just go to lancasterfarming.com/podcastdeal for a discounted offer on the number one agricultural newspaper in the Mid-Atlantic region. So check it out, lancasterfarming.com/podcastdeal. Okay, back to the show. Hey, welcome to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. Could you introduce yourself for us?
Thanks, Eric. My name is Larry Smart. I'm a professor of horticulture in the School of Integrated Plant Science at Cornell University. I'm also the associate director of Cornell Agritech, which is our campus in Geneva, New York.
Okay, and that you work directly with farmers to share information and growing practices?
I am right now helping to lead the Cornell Hemp Research Team.
Okay.
I am a plant breeder, and we are starting a long-term hemp breeding program, but also I have been doing a lot of extension work and outreach to growers and processors.
Now, you've been researching the shrub willow as a source of bioenergy. Can you talk a bit about that and maybe how it prepared you for working with industrial hemp?
Sure. Yeah, I've been studying willow for more than 20 years and focusing on breeding and genetics of willow, trying to produce new cultivars that produce higher yields for biofuels and bioenergy. I work closely with colleagues across the Northeast, and we've had funding from USDA and other sources, Department of Energy, including folks at Penn State. We have some trials on the Penn State campus right now. SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry in Syracuse, and West Virginia University.
Okay.
So the goal is to develop a high-yielding woody feedstock that we can use to generate renewable power, renewable heat, and as a feedstock for liquid biofuels.
Would the woody mass, would that be burned to make the energy, or how does that process work?
Yeah, that's the easiest and commercially viable conversion system right now. We have three wood-fired power plants in New York State.
Okay.
And a number of smaller installations of wood-fired boilers for heating. We have a small wood-fired boiler on our campus at Cornell Agritech that heats two of our buildings entirely with willow that we grow on our campus farms.
Oh, wow.
Within 2 miles of the boiler. So again, the goal is to find an alternative use, especially for marginal land, poorly drained land that we have lots of in the Northeast and mm-hmm. upper Midwest, a low input system that also sequesters carbon as it grows. So it is a carbon negative fuel source.
Even when it's burned?
Even when it's burned, right. So the CO2 that's released through combustion is all CO2 that was captured by the plant. We harvest on a 3-year cycle. So that CO2 is captured over the three seasons of growth of the willow. Then we harvest it and burn it to generate heat. And then it re-sprouts after harvest and starts another three-year cycle. So it's a very low input, highly sustainable system. And as it grows, it's accumulating carbon in the soil, making it a net carbon negative system.
Okay.
In comparing it to hemp, willow is a perennial plant. So we plant it once and it's productive for more than 25 years.
Oh.
Hemp is an annual plant.
Sure.
So we would be growing hemp as we would other field crops and horticultural crops. So that's a major difference. But one interesting similarity is both hemp and willow are dioecious, meaning that each plant is either male or female, which is somewhat unique. There aren't that many species in the plant kingdom that are dioecious. And hemp has a well-established sex chromosome and an XY system similar to humans. Willow has an evolving sex determination system. It doesn't have a distinct sex chromosome yet. That's an interesting feature about hemp and willow that are in common. And sex is an important trait in hemp because we use the female plant specifically for the production of CBD and THC.
Sure. Does that dioecious trait mean anything in terms of the male or female plant's bioenergy output?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the question that you're asking in sort of scientific terms is there dimorphism between males and females? And you can imagine in biology, there are a lot of differences between males and females. Mm-hmm. For example, think about songbirds. Right. The male cardinal is bright red and the female is a different color. So it has a lot to do with mate attraction in animals. But the question you ask is, for example, is there different biomass production between male and female willows, or would the fiber properties of a male hemp plant be different from a female plant? So those are great questions to ask, and we're about to submit a paper actually in willow showing that yes, some of the traits in willow are statistically different between males and females. In fact, males tend to grow larger than females. That's something we're very interested in looking at in hemp. We know that male hemp plants grow taller than female plants, and they flower earlier than female plants. So that's at least one trait that we know is different between males and females.
Okay. Can you describe New York State's hemp program and how Cornell has been working through the State Department of Agriculture?
Yeah, absolutely. So New York passed its pilot program, I think, in late 2015, and the initial rollout was to license institutions of higher learning first. Mm-hmm. So the first college to apply for a license was Morrisville State College, and Cornell was second, and then also Binghamton University and SUNY Sullivan were early on pioneers in doing hemp research in New York State. So we've been doing trials on hemp since the middle of 2016. We also secured our DEA Schedule I controlled substance registration for marijuana. So we can work with hemp and import hemp seeds with the DEA import permit.
Okay.
And early in 2017, the governor and Department of Ag and Markets announced that they were going to put $5 million into hemp plant science and agronomy research. And Cornell has been very fortunate to benefit from much of those research dollars, including $2 million for us to build a hemp breeding program over 4 years, $900,000, which we used to established 1,700 acres of hemp with 24 different farms in 2017, and also to establish our network of extension specialists and to study pests and diseases in hemp and develop a transformation system. So, yeah, we are all in on hemp at Cornell and also doing the best we can to support a growing hemp industry in New York State.
So what are some of the other goals of your hemp research?
Right. So one of the main early goals is to evaluate the available commercial cultivars that are out there so that growers have knowledge on what will grow well under New York conditions as they're ordering their seed. So that's been one of the things we paid a lot of attention to in 2017 and 2018 was to get as much of the available commercial cultivars as we could. We tested 35 grain and fiber cultivars in 2018 in replicated trials from as far south as Long Island, where we have a horticultural research and extension center on our Ithaca campus, on our Geneva campus, and up north, we have a dairy research center in Chazy, New York.
Okay.
So in 2018, we covered the full latitudinal range of New York State and demonstrated differences in productivity for grain and fiber of the different available commercial cultivars. Hmm. At the same time, we're surveying for pests and diseases, and again, studying the biochemistry of CBD and THC production in different cultivars.
Okay. Now, so I talked to a fair amount of hemp growers down here in Pennsylvania, and a few of them talk about the genetics of their plants aren't stable. Can you explain to me what that means, and can hemp genetics be stabilized?
Yes, for sure. So because hemp is a dioecious species, it has males and females, it outcrosses naturally. Different individuals will cross with each other. And that generates a lot of genetic diversity in hemp populations. So breeding hemp to create what is a stable and uniform population of seeds that growers can plant takes a lot of time, a lot of careful observation of your populations in your breeding program to make sure that at each cycle of seed production, you have a very uniform set of plants for all of the key traits for production, whether it's height, whether it's CBD production. In the case of hemp, it's critical that those plants are consistent for very low THC production.
Right.
So if you have a small percentage of plants in your population that have the genes for THC production, they can get integrated into the seed lot, and that can be, you know, a big risk for growers. Sure. If they're planting a population potentially that could produce above the regulatory limits for THC. So hemp breeding takes some time and careful selection, chemical characterization for THC, in order to produce a stable and uniform cultivar.
Okay. As far as the cannabinoids go, I understand there's, you know, over 100 that have been identified. You know, the big ones are CBD and THC. Have your researchers been looking at some of the other chemical compounds and what they might be able to do?
Yeah, we have been quantifying the variation in the cultivars that we've been growing for the 10 or 11 cannabinoids that we can get commercially available standards for. So that's one of the issues is there are 100 different cannabinoids, but in order to quantify them on our instruments, we need to have, you know, representative standards. So we can match up what we see in our samples with known compounds. But we have been looking at the concentrations of CBG and CBC, as well as CBD and THC. Those minor cannabinoids are present in very low concentrations, but it's entirely possible that they have biological or pharmacological activity. And we're very interested in studying that. There's been very little real good replicated research to quantify those activities. We have a proposal we're working on right now with colleagues of mine at Weill Cornell Medicine, our medical school in New York City, to take diverse cannabinoid extracts that we can isolate from different cultivars in our breeding program and test their activity on pain signaling molecules. These are folks in the Department of Anesthesiology, so they have a very good understanding of the pathway of signaling that occurs in signaling pain. Okay. And we'd like to understand how different cannabinoids interact with those pain signaling molecules.
That's fascinating. Can you talk about industrial hemp's like challenges? Like what is hemp up against?
So absolutely the biggest challenge is for growers to obtain high quality, stable, uniform seed for their crops. That's been something we've been working on. And again, we hope through our breeding program, we can generate a cultivar, stable, uniform, unique cultivar that's adapted to New York conditions. But also the tremendous interest in this crop has attracted a lot of growers and a lot of processors, but matching production activity with processing activity is always a huge challenge. You know, that whole chicken and egg scenario, you need to have production in order to have a feedstock for your processing plant. And we don't want farmers to plant the crop unless they have someone to buy it, right? And then the other big challenge is much of this industry, especially the CBD component of the industry, has evolved from a marijuana culture, whether legal or underground. And much of that culture is not based in replicated and publicly available science. So adapting that material and that technology from that industry and making it conventional and publicly available has been quite a challenge and will continue to be a challenge.
Okay. What are some of hemp's promises?
So I think hemp has tremendous promise as a bio-based and agriculturally based material, initially for industrial materials or other material science applications. So we've already seen, we know historically that hemp was a very good feedstock for rope and fabrics, very high quality cloth and rope. So we know it has fantastic structural properties in that respect. And we just need to do more engineering and, again, make a commitment to using bio-based materials instead of fossil fuel materials to work towards sustainability and also promote feedstocks that are produced agriculturally rather than from a petroleum refinery, right? So that's the great promise that we all hope to see for hemp. It is also a tremendous food source and potentially animal feed source with very nutritious grain and oil. And then, again, the diversity of chemistry that hemp can make, again, seems to have tremendous promise for medicinal or pharmaceutical applications. So, you know, it has people tout its potential products that can be made from hemp. Really, it's true, but the challenge is to identify those materials that can be competitive and cost effective and profitable in the marketplace over existing products. But it would go a long way to doing that if we made a commitment to shift from fossil fuel and petroleum-based products to more bio-based and agriculturally-based feedstock.
Yeah, how do we do that? What needs to happen? Is that like consumer-driven or is that political?
A lot of it can be consumer-driven for sure. And again, BMW is putting compressed hemp panels in the doors of many of its models of vehicles. Because they made a commitment and can advertise to consumers that they're using a bio-based product rather than a fiberglass-based product in their cars. So if we as consumers put value in that, in buying bio-based materials instead of plastic-based materials, that certainly can drive and stimulate the market. Then we can have policy-based mechanisms. So if we were to impose a higher price for carbon, and there are some bills being considered that would do that, then I think hemp would benefit in that respect over petroleum-based products if we were truly monetizing the cost that petroleum has on our environment.
Yeah. And do you think that will happen? Are you hopeful?
Well, I do hold out hope. And after working on Willow as a bioenergy source, and I think a very sustainable fuel source for more than 20 years, right now, it is a bit frustrating that policy in our country has steered away from renewable energy sources.
Yes.
But I think we're seeing more and more the impacts of climate change on our environment, on our economy, and the cost that it imposes on our economy. And that argument that shifting to renewable fuel sources instead of fossil fuels, I think, is holding that shift is more expensive, is losing validity as we spend more and more money paying for the cost of the impacts of climate change.
Yeah, that must be very frustrating for you as a scientist and an educator.
I think the science is clear that climate change is having a big impact on our environment, and that we have real viable solutions. We just need to make the commitment to shift to those more bio-based and agriculturally based solutions. And let me say that the Northeast has tremendously rich resources for renewable energy and bio-based fuels. We have tremendous forest resources that are underutilized, and agricultural resources that are underutilized.
So switching gears a little bit to your work with farmers, what kinds of questions do you get from farmers about industrial hemp?
So let me say that this whole hemp boom, we can say, has attracted tremendous interest to agriculture from folks who have not been involved in agriculture before. So I see that as a real positive, that we're bringing people, especially young people, back to farming and back to agriculture because of their attraction and almost romance for hemp. So we have been answering a lot of questions from new and beginning farmers, which, you know, can be a challenge because hemp is not the easiest or cheapest crop to grow. But we also have interest from well-established farmers, and in New York State, particularly from many of our dairy farmers, because they are struggling financially.
Yeah.
So we've been answering questions about how they might transition or integrate hemp into their farming operation and whether they can do that profitably. And then again, we're answering questions from processors and trying to match growers with processors to connect supply chains and make sure that we have all of the resources and equipment that we need to make sure that we have complete and stable supply chains.
Right. What should farmers be doing now to prepare for this crop and industry?
There is a lot of information that they can glean. They can do their homework. One of the challenges is identifying seed sources. So many of our successful farmers in New York have actually traveled to some of the more established hemp production regions in Kentucky, Colorado, and Oregon to talk with growers there, to talk with seed suppliers, to build personal relationships with those folks. And I've been doing that myself as well, because we don't want to reinvent the wheel. We want to take advantage of some of the work that has been done in those states in advance of us, so that they've given us a head start, so to speak.
Okay.
So doing your homework, building connections with folks who are knowledgeable about hemp cultivation and hemp processing, is an important step. And then evaluating whether hemp as a crop will fit in with your farming operation, both in terms of equipment and labor needs and potential product streams.
What do farmers need to watch out for? How can they avoid getting the short end of the stick?
Yeah, we have already heard of some contractual arrangements that have not been honored. So it's critical for farmers, again, to make sure they have a buyer for their product before they plant and invest a lot of money, and that the contracts that they have are strong and protect them financially as much as possible, and that their partners are vetted and reliable and trusted partners. And I don't know how much more we can do to assure that, but in this industry in particular, there are a number of folks who are in it just for profit and not in it for the long-term success or viability of the region or of their grower partners. So it's critical to identify partners who you trust.
You had mentioned, you know, the other states, Kentucky, Colorado, Oregon, who are further along in this sort of hemp journey. Do you see a competition between states, or is there a way that we can work together nationally or at least regionally?
Yeah, there is both competition and cooperation. So I'll give you an excellent example. This is a highly regulated crop at the state level. Each state has their own individual pilot program. So that creates a little bit different business environment in the different states. And companies look at that business environment and regulatory environment as they're choosing a state. For example, Iowa and Georgia have not passed pilot programs yet. So if a business saw the tremendous agricultural potential in Iowa, hemp is not an option there right now. But when we look at the other, so the example I want to give you is that the regulators in each state have come together and formed an association and meet on an annual basis and communicate with each other quite closely to share experiences, to share testing protocols and regulatory structures that have worked in their states. So as New York was rolling out its pilot program, it was taking advice from state regulators in North Carolina, Kentucky, and Colorado to guide the structure and implementation of our pilot program. And we were lucky to host that annual meeting of the state hemp program regulators here in Geneva with Ag and Markets hosted it, but we cooperated with them here in Geneva. And it was very inspiring, I would say, to see the level of cooperation between these different programs in different states. They're definitely different growing environments, and each state is going to have its regional advantages and again, agricultural advantages in terms of its resource and land base. But we would certainly like to have companies locate in New York or for you in Pennsylvania to serve the rural economies and to build up our rural economies.
Sure.
So there is a certain amount of competition in that respect.
Okay. We noticed recently that Canopy Growth has announced plans to put a processing facility in the southern tier of New York. Were you involved in that, or did they consult with you at all?
We have been in discussions with folks at Canopy since they made that announcement, but I was not directly involved or directly communicating with them prior to that announcement, no.
But that's exciting news for your farmers up there.
Oh, and we've had a number of other projects that have been proposed or announced, including a hemp hub project in the Buffalo area.
Oh, okay.
Another hemp processing facility in the Binghamton area, and another processing facility in Orange County that's being considered. So yeah, we have a lot of processing activity going on in New York State.
Cool.
That will need to be matched again with farm production activity.
Right. Is there any way to tell what like full production in the state would look like acreage wise?
So that is a hard thing to predict because it will depend on the growth of the fiber industry primarily. So I think we can predict if hemp food products were to take off, and one of the product lines that I think has great potential for growth is in the plant-based protein market. Mm-hmm. So many consumers are shifting away from meat-based protein to plant-based proteins, and hemp protein, I think, would fill that market opportunity very well. So we could imagine, I think, scaling up to, I'll just guess, 20,000 acres for the production of hemp grain to meet a plant-based meat market.
Okay.
And other plant protein markets. But if we were to develop more fiber-based products to meet our manufacturing needs, I think the acreage could be much larger than that.
Right.
So, you know, that 20,000 acres, that's about a target that many of our higher end in terms of acreage specialty crops occupy right now, meaning sweet corn, tomatoes, mm-hmm. cucurbits are in that range. If we have a viable and active and productive fiber market in New York State, I think we could plant significantly more acreage. I would guess on the order of 50 to maybe 100,000 acres to meet those fiber needs. The CBD market is very hard to predict because it's growing so rapidly nationwide.
Yeah.
Although demand is growing very rapidly right now, it's very hard to predict what the future demand and supply is going to be, and which regions of the country are going to become the dominant producers
right.
for those products. But again, it could be as high as, I'll just guess, 5,000 to 10,000 acres.
Okay. And what kind of time frame are you looking at there? Is that a 5 to 10 year window?
That's right. Because the capital investment in fiber processing facilities is so great, there is a barrier to entry there. So when we talk about scaling up a big fiber processing and production industry, it's probably on a 5 to 10 year timeframe.
So Larry, thank you very much for your time today. Is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners about your work with Industrial Hemp?
I just want to share that, again, we are shifting from sort of an underground and illegal area of research that had a lot of gray areas of legal jeopardy to making this a conventional agricultural industry. And that will take some time, but we have a lot of colleagues across the country who are interested and engaged in hemp, including a strong group in the Northeast. And it's very encouraging and exciting to see the potential growth of this industry as a new crop for our farmers.
Well, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
That was Larry Smart, a leader of the hemp research team at Cornell University. Well, before we go, I have a few additional items to share with you. First, next Wednesday, March 13th, the USDA is hosting a 2018 Farm Bill Implementation Listening Session on hemp. It's for initial public input about a new program to regulate hemp production. Just Google USDA Hemp Listening Session and you'll find it. It is a free public webinar, but if you want to give your input, you need to register by Monday, March 11th. Okay, next thing. Do you remember the GoFundMe campaign for the guy who wants to buy a hemp ukulele for his friend in Florida? Well, we got our first donation. Thank you, Catherine. We appreciate that. If you would like to get involved in this, just go to gofundme.com/hempukulele and you can find out more about it. Okay, next item. This past Monday, we discovered that our podcast was chosen by Modern Farmer magazine for their list of 10 great farming podcasts to listen to now. They say, kudos to Pennsylvania farm newspaper Lancaster Farming for embarking on an original farming podcast series. LF digital editor Eric Harlock, that's me, posts weekly episodes to examine different aspects of the emerging industrial hemp sector. Yeah. So I know some of you were ahead of the curve on this, and I do appreciate your listening. But for any new listeners who found us through Modern Farmer, welcome. It's nice to have you with us. And if the folks at Modern Farmer are listening, Laura Sayer, for example, who wrote the article, thank you very much for finding us and shining a light on us. Appreciate it. Okay, another thing. I am looking for personal anecdotes about CBD. If you've taken it or if you know someone who has taken it and how it has affected your life, positive or negative, I would like to hear your story. You can call my voicemail and leave me a message. And this is for a future show about CBD benefits. You can leave me a voicemail at 717-721-4462. And if you have any questions or comments about anything you heard in today's show, or if you have ideas for future shows or whatever, I want to hear from you. Send an email to podcast@lancasterfarming.com. And finally, I have a favor to ask. If you have enjoyed our show, I ask that you share it with just one other person, somebody in your life, somebody at work, in your field of expertise. Let them know about our show. Thank you. My name is Eric Harlock. I'm the digital editor at Lancaster Farming, and I thank you for listening to today's show. And until next time, I'll see you in the newspaper. Okay, last week I had the realization that I should be adding credits to our show because you gotta give credit where credit is due. So, this episode of the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast, episode 25, is copyright 2019, Lancaster Farming. And Lancaster Farming is part of the Steinman Communications family. That feels good. Family. Anyway, today's show was written, recorded, produced, researched, edited, all that stuff by Eric Harlock. That's me. The music that you hear throughout the show, the theme song, and whatever else, is courtesy of Tin Bird Shadow. So thank you, Tin Bird Shadow.